It is late at night as I'm doing this podcast, and I'm reminded that we are watching a complex developing story, which is rapidly overwhelming almost everything else going on in the world. We're watching the reactions to the overwhelming need or desire of the media, politicians, commentators, and other content creators to predict, and not only to predict the future, but to be correct in predicting the future. And the immediate negative reaction if somebody says something that might not be borne out in just the next 24 or 48 hours. So we're going to talk about this developing story. And I also want to talk about the need for our perception of institutions in this country to be perfect and competent and on top of everything, when in reality they might not be. We're going to talk about it in Fearmonger, Fishmonger, Virusmonger, podcast 908, the Bob Davis podcasts. Well, I talk a lot about small business. And, you know, those of us in small business and medium-sized businesses really work hard to deliver the best customer service to our customers. Now, for me, I have two customers. I have the audience, and then I have my clients. And I have a few enough number of clients that I can service them well. If you're one of these businesses that you have a lot of clients, then you might want to think about getting a really heavy-duty payment processor. And for that, I would refer you to ReliaFund, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D. ReliaFund is a company that has been actually doing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades as a payment processor. They were at the outset of the payment processing revolution in this country. I found ReliaFund because I went on their contact page online and said, hey, you know, told this whole thing about getting customers to be able to pay with checks. And so they've developed a button for me to put on my website so that clients could pay with electronic checks as they want. And it works flawlessly. Because what they do at ReliaFund is integrate their systems with your systems, and they do it whether it's back office or it's e-commerce or whatever it is that they do. So they're, you know, there's all kinds of payment processors, but there's not necessarily a lot of payment processors that are really heavy duty and can work as deep as you need them to work. So here's the deal. ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. No long-term contracts. They're secure and technology-focused. 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. And here's the best part, especially as it pertains to this podcast. If you call them, you're going to talk to a human being, Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry. 866-243-5040. Or check them out online at ReliaFund.com, or click on the ReliaFund banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. I'm going to talk about competence for American businesses in this podcast. And one of the most incompetent things, I'm sorry, but these big box office store retailers and the amount of money that they charge for print cartridges is ridiculous. And so I've solved that problem with Cartridge World. You can get 30% off of cartridges compared to the big box stores. Free delivery on qualifying orders. They can even get you a printer. Cartridge World is available at 763-420-6632. They go metro-wide from Maple Grove. Click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com that says Cartridge World, or call them at 763-420-6632, Cartridge World. Why pay more to print? I can almost hear my 10-year-old son saying, you know, okay, Dad, what's a monger? Well, we are all mongers of something. A monger is simply a dealer or trader in a specified commodity. Also, it is a person who promotes a specified activity, situation, or feeling, especially one that is undesirable or discreditable. I didn't really research why monger is such a negative word for that, but we are all essentially mongers of something. We deal in some form of trade, especially those of us that are doing content creation or in the media. And I want to do an easy talker about this, because I was thinking today that, so the last podcast, I basically said that if there is a sustained economic downturn, it will probably sink the Trump presidency. That's just an opinion that I have. I find it interesting because immediately people wanted to argue with the what they consider to be fear-mongering as it relates to COVID-19 or coronavirus, because you know, they'll compare it to the flu or they'll compare it to other viruses, and they'll say they're trying to make everyone scared, and they're trying to, this is going to end up being a political thing, and they're all going to have egg on their face when it turns out that it's not a pandemic, and so on. Or the reaction is the media is trying to blame everything on the president, and you know, it's not his fault, and he did everything he could do, and so on and so on and so on. That wasn't really the intention or the focus of the last podcast. The intention and focus of the last podcast was to say, okay, so what if it is a pandemic? How does it affect the world economy? How does that affect the United States economy? What are the potential political knock-ons of that? The only real prediction I made, and I actually identified it as a prediction, was saying, if we have a sustained economic downturn, if you look at the polling in the battleground states where the presidency is going to be determined, unless there's a new battleground I'm unaware of, or unless a new battleground emerges before November, you know, 2020, then you look in Ohio, you look in Pennsylvania, look in Florida, look in Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, perhaps Iowa, Missouri, places like that. There's two big political issues, and they've been static for the last two or three election cycles, and it's the economy and it is healthcare. So those two things are deeply affected by something like a pandemic, should it actually happen. And if economics are, you know, any indicator of potential changes in the political atmosphere, then I'd have to say that that's going to be something, because Trump has very high scores on the economy. If there's a problem, then that's going to negatively affect the president. That's all I said. And it's so interesting to me to watch this thing develop. First of all, what do I mean by a developing story? Well, a developing story is a story where almost always the initial reports are wrong, because reporters and the media, and I know that people are going to say, oh, you know, they're all biased, and they're struggling to get the story out. They're struggling to find facts, and they're under pressure to get stuff out and get it up there as quickly as possible. There's no real deadline in digital media. It's get it up there as soon as you can. So what they're doing is they're rewriting, they're writing down what they hear with innuendo, and of course, almost all of these initial stories are going to be wrong. A good example is what happened on 9/11 in real time. It happened so fast. If you go back and look at coverage in real time, there were reports that Chicago was under attack, and of course, we know that that didn't happen. I'm not saying that there wasn't an attempt, but in real time, you know, when this thing was going down, because I was on the radio that day, there were a lot of things that just came out that we later just rejected because we knew that they were going to get changed. So this is a little bit more of a slow-moving story, and I don't think the podcast medium is appropriate for sitting here and giving you the latest news on coronavirus, because it's all going to change the next day. There are some interesting stories. For one, this whole story about this has been going on in the United States for 6 weeks, and we didn't have test kits. And one of the reasons the cases are low in the U.S. is we haven't been testing. All of these things are, you know, sort of bubbling under, or they're becoming major stories. And suffice it to say, as cases spread, and they are going to, and deaths occur, this is going to occupy many, many people's attention, and it may or may not have economic knock-on effects. So this is the thing that I was thinking about today when I was thinking, well, how am I going to do this podcast? What am I going to say in this podcast? Where am I going to go with this? There's tremendous pressure on politicians, and they put the pressure on themselves, because I've noticed this when it comes to these sorts of things. When you look into why disasters occur, it's usually a cascading problem that certain things aren't handled, or they lead to other things that then begin to cascade. Now, I'm not suggesting that we're not ready for this or anything else. I'm asking that question. One of the things that I've noticed about our society today, and I think it's time to talk about, and I've sort of alluded to this a little bit, and I want to talk about it in this podcast, is this projection of competency and projection of we're on top of this. Don't worry. We've got this under control. We've got the best people on this and they know what to do and don't panic. And, you know, these are the things you're supposed to do. And we've got this, you know, we've got this because this is our job. This is what we're supposed to do. And we're the best in the world. And okay, and then something else happens, and something else happens, and something else happens, and the impression that there's competency or the impression that they've got things under control begins to sort of crumble. And then they start putting their foot down and saying, we've got this, and then you don't hear anything more about it, and you don't see the politicians come out anymore because they know that it isn't necessarily under control. Now, I'm not saying that's what's going on here. I'm saying that there's a lot of people right now pointing to people who are saying, hey, what about this or what about that? And saying, you're an idiot. You know, this is, look at H1N1. You know, look at the flu, comparing it to the flu, or, you know, fake news or anything that potentially impacts in a negative way on their person. And I have no doubt that this would be the same if Barack Obama was president. They circle the wagons and insult people for how dare you suggest that this president dot, dot, dot. How dare you suggest that the governor dot, dot, dot. How dare you suggest that we don't have blah, 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 whatever it is. And, you know, this is how any open discussion of the issue is put down. This is a complex thing, this virus, and we don't really know what's going to happen with it yet. And so it's okay to speculate on where this goes. It's okay to speculate on this because this is what traders are doing. This is what investors are doing. This is what people who work in the medical industry are doing. You know, they're sitting around trying to figure out, well, this is what we know. This is what it could be. It might not be that. It could be different. You know, what's our plan going to be? Is it going to be to move money to this, to do that? What's going to be the effect if the Federal Reserve, blah, 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 blah. Now, when I did the first podcast about this, podcast 907, that was 2 days after we had had a continuing and precipitous drop in the markets. And then, of course, today, in podcast time, the market recovered almost 1,200 points. And so everyone is saying, oh, see, there was nothing to worry about. It was a buying opportunity and everything else. Well, you've heard of the mythical plunge protection team, which supposedly is a quasi-shadowy group that steps into the market and buys securities if there are precipitate drops. We don't know if this is the plunge protection team. We're also aware that the president has been, you know, bending the ear through the media of the Fed chairman to stand by to cut interest rates this month early. And so a lot of this might have been, you know, triggered by the belief that interest rates are going to be cut in addition to the plunge protection team. We'll just have to see. We don't know. So when people say, sound the all clear, you know, this is one of those things that may not be all clear. We don't know what's going to happen. In the end, it might amount to nothing. But keep in mind, six people in the United States have died, and there are now something like 111 or 112 cases at last count tonight in podcast time. When I checked 2 days ago, it was 20, and that wasn't even counting the cases that are from the cruise ship. So there's roughly 140 cases, and we've had six deaths in Washington, and now cases are beginning to pop up in Rhode Island and other places. So if Italy is any cue or South Korea is any cue, yeah, there are all kinds of statements like, well, we have lots of space in America and we don't get together like they do in South Korea. We don't have these closely packed cities like they do. You know, I don't know about any of that. But again, this is all this attempt to minimize. Don't worry, it's not as bad as they say it is and stuff. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, I have no idea if it's bad or if it isn't bad. I'm not here to tell you that. That's not my job. My mongering is the mongering of basically trading in these ideas to get people to think about things. And so in the second half of this podcast, I'm just going to very quickly, and again, this is an easy talker. I don't have notes. I haven't researched this. This is just stuff that I feel. And I think it's time to talk about this question of What is the level of the competency of America's institutions or the West's institutions, or really any institutions anywhere? We could talk about China. I'm going to talk about the United States. And I'm going to talk about business in relation to the possibility of precipitate drops in the stock market and the reaction, or if all of the recession indicators are true. In other words, if this is enough to trigger a recession, then what happens? And I want to talk about this a little bit in terms of this perception of competency in the second half of this podcast. Now, I fully expect, they keep talking about an early spring. Technically, literally, it's in terms of time, it is an early spring. Technically, we might have another snowstorm. But if you are planning on, you know, upgrading your home, so you think you might do an addition or a man cave in the garage or a basement or a new bathroom or kitchen, you should see what Whitetail Builders can do. I was hanging out with Randy the other day, and he did this presentation with some of the things that they do, and it is amazing. Not only are they great contractors themselves, but they can refer great partners to you for things like cabinets and plumbing. With Whitetail Builders, the process is just as important as the end result. This is why I tell people Randy Grabo at Whitetail will be there with you every step of the way. Call Randy. He loves to talk about your dreams. 612-282-8801. That's 612-282-8801. Whitetail Builders. Click on the banner at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcast.com, and that will take you to their website and their contact page at whitetailbuildersinc.com. Whitetail Builders, helping you construct your dreams. So yeah, the disclaimer here is I really haven't researched this. This is just off the top of my head, and I think it's kind of fun to think about and talk about. But I'm going to tell you some stories and some things that have happened to me recently, because I don't think that things are as smooth and as perfect as America's corporate leaders and America's political leaders would have us believe. And I've had some experiences recently which kind of brought this up for me, and I'm going to talk about them in the second half of this podcast, as I said. And so what are you talking about, Bob Davis? What do you mean? Well, you know, we are treated to, whether we watch football games or we're online or we watch favorite TV shows, broadcast television, cable news, whatever, we are treated to commercials which show America's corporations and service, you know, whether it's services or products, in the best possible light. This is this fantastic company, and everything is great. When it comes to something like Facebook, which really doesn't advertise because they don't have to, or Google, or you know, any of these companies, they will tell you, you know, we've got this, these, you know, the when they interview someone like Mark Zuckerberg or one of the guys, you know, they always sort of project this air of confidence, which they have to protect their share prices, and they have to be very careful about what they say. And of course, corporations have developed this way of speaking that the layman has no idea what they're talking about because everything's in jargon. And if you question them, well, you idiot, you know, don't you know what this is? Don't you know what that is? And so forth, because they don't speak plain English most of the time, because they're trying to project this image of competence and perfection. And we've got everything under control. And yet, I don't know about you, but I certainly have had experiences of what happens when something goes wrong. So, for example, we're told that these big communications companies that sell, you know, phones and provide, you know, the service that allows you to use your phone. They have really got it together. They're technical companies, technology companies. They've really got it together, and boy, they're incredible. And when you go to the store to buy your phone and get your package, they project this air of here's all these packages and these complexities. The same is true with the cable companies and banks especially. They want to create this image of perfection and competence, and don't worry, we've got this under control. But in reality, most of the services that are, and I'm talking about the most popular, the strongest, the largest companies, are often, very complex. So there's a lot of complexity in these companies. And of course, when things go wrong, the impression that you might have, so if you decide to pay your bill with a computer, so you call a cable company and you choose the electronic bill pay option, or you do it online and you make your bill payment and it functions seamlessly, you're like, wow, that's pretty amazing. And then the impression is given, this monolithic impression of absolute competence. And when something goes wrong, you find out that they're not as competent as it looks. And I'm going to give you an example. I'm not going to use names. Three examples, actually four, that I think are fascinating. The first one goes back a while back. I'm not a morning person, and I was being awakened every day at about 7 o'clock by this company that provides my cell phone service. And I thought, oh my God, this is I've got a problem with my phone. I didn't pay my bill, or they didn't get the bill received or whatever. So I would take the call and it would be a survey. And I would tell the guy, please don't call me again. I don't want to take any more surveys. If I have something to tell you, I will tell you if there's a problem. And okay, you know, thank you. And then the next day I'd get a call. And it didn't seem, no matter what I did, I couldn't stop these survey calls. And finally, I sat down and I wrote a letter to the chairman of this company, and I said to the I had to do some research online, find out who the chairman was. In fact, I even called the main headquarters of this company in a big city, and I talked to an executive secretary, and I said, you know, how do I get a letter to the chairman? Oh, you know, you don't send a letter to the chairman. You know, you have to email him. And nope, don't want to do that. I want to send a letter. So basically, what I did was I got the address of the executive offices of this company, and I wrote a letter, and I basically said, you know, you're a CEO, I'm a CEO, my company is considerably smaller, but I don't like being interrupted by what I consider to be emergency calls. This, the company shall remain nameless, is on the phone. Maybe there's a problem with my phone. Excuse me, I'm going to go take this call. I asked the chairman, would you take a call from Jamba Juice, for example, to do a survey, or Starbucks, if you were pulled out of a board meeting, or you were, sir, you know, ma'am, you know, such and such is on the phone from Jamba Juice and they want to talk to you about your account. Oh, well, what's going on with Jamba Juice? You wouldn't take the call, and you might actually be considerably irritated if it happened every day. Well, anyway, I wrote this letter and I figured, you know, I'll never hear anything. And about a week later, I got a call from the executive secretary of this, the executive assistant of this chairman, and they said, first of all, thank you for your very, you know, I didn't call them any names, or I just explained my problem. I can't get these people to stop calling me. I don't want to hear from you. If I have something to tell you, I will tell you. I don't want to take any surveys, and I've asked them several times. I don't want to take any surveys. Well, how many times have you been called? Well, I've been called several times, four or five times. And finally, the executive assistant said, the chairman was unaware of this problem, and you can believe it when I tell you that we didn't know this was happening, and we have gotten into this in depth. And, you know, they didn't say heads will roll, but that was the impression that was given. That was the first thing. The second thing is, just recently this happened, and that wasn't the first letter I've written to a chairman of a company. So what I'm trying to say is, here is this monolithic company that's supposed to be so competent that didn't even know that this survey thing was going on. Very irritating from a customer service perspective. Then there's another one, and this happened while I was traveling, and I'm not going to say the name of the bank, but I have two cards, debit cards from this place where I do banking. One of them is in an account that you can't withdraw more than a certain amount of money from. When I go on a trip, I will go to the bank and transfer money from the account that has more money in it to my business account so that I can put gas in the car and things of that nature. Now, when you make a donation to the BobDavisPodcast.com when I'm on the road, that goes to PayPal. There's usually $200 or $300 in there on the trip for an emergency fill-up if I need it, right? But I put the money, this is my money that I take from my personal account and put into my business account to finance these trips, okay? So, you know, you're supposed to tell the bank that you're going to travel. And so then they ask, as a security measure, how many states are you going to? And they're very official about it. Okay, you're going to Iowa, you're going to Missouri, you're going to Kansas, you're going to, you know, Texas, you're going to Oklahoma, you're going to Nebraska, blah, 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 blah. And I tried to name as many states as I could where I was going. And the bank was like, okay, you're good to go. Don't worry, you don't have problems. We're going to take care of this. So off I go. So I was in Iowa for a month, went to Oklahoma, went down to Texas pretty quick. So it took me a couple days to get to Texas, was down in Texas. On the way back, I think I was in Texas. I could have been in Oklahoma. Don't remember. They turned off my credit cards. So I'm actually putting gas in the vehicle and it doesn't work. I can't get the card to go through. So then what do you do when that happens? You're supposed to call this number for card services and then they say, Mr. Davis, you know, we noticed that your card was used at a such and such gas station, which, by the way, is extremely irritated. Oh, again, this air of competency. And so and so and so. So to make a long story short, because I don't want to go on forever, because I have one more example. They were like, okay, they turned the card back on. Well, then an hour and a half later, the card was off again. And this happened several times to the point where I had talked to so many different people at this place that they didn't know what was up. And then I was basically without any money in the middle of Oklahoma. And I was like, I told them, if I can't get home because of this, there's going to be hell to pay. Now, at the same time, I emailed the bank, the head of card services at the bank, to let them know that this was going on. And of course, they weren't there. And it said, leave us a message and we'll get back to you immediately. And I told the whole story. I've been a customer of your bank for 30 years. This is an egregious situation, yada, yada, yada. So finally, I figured out, they said, well, we're going to turn your cards back on. So the account that you can't take a lot of money out of because of federal rules and regulations, by the way, had enough money that I could transfer $1,000 from that account into my PayPal if the card would work. So I tried it. It didn't work. And I was on the phone with card services and I was like, this is ridiculous. And finally she said, well, try it again. And I know that she turned it back on so I could do that. And of course, immediately that account was considered over, in arrears because I had taken $1,000 out and you're not supposed to do that. Well, the next day I heard from the card services person at the bank who said, you're not the only person who's had this problem, went through a long and involved explanation of the problem with card services and so forth and so on. And I said, she said, we're very sorry this happened. I've fixed all of your accounts. You're good to go. Now, remember, I'm using PayPal because I put $1,000 in there. This is how I got home, by the way. You should be okay. And we're really sorry. What do you think? What would you do? And I said, honestly, I would fire them. I would fire that company because they are terribly, you would get different levels of competency. When you called them, some of these people wouldn't know what they were doing. The next guy would say, well, they didn't do it right. And then you get a supervisor who did know, and then she turned them back on, and then they go back off. And this is all supposedly for my benefit, this security. I mean, this is ridiculous, right? This is, we will protect you on your trip. Don't worry. Well, it didn't work. Again, this perception of competency is very much, the emperor has no clothes kind of a situation. Finally, in an ongoing struggle with Facebook. So if you post political content and promote that political content on your business page on Facebook, you have to go through this complex authentication process, which I went through last year and I talked about it in a podcast, and it's absurd because I'm not running political ads, I'm doing content. So when I promote my podcast, I'm promoting the content, not a political position, right? But they put Bloomberg through this process. They put the New York Times through this process and network news organizations through this process because they're so concerned about this situation. So Facebook is presented as this wonder of a tech company. But when you actually get into Facebook to try to actually do something, so I tried to boost a post over the weekend for Monday morning, and I could not figure out why it wasn't posting. And it kept saying, you're not authorized. You have to reauthorize. You have to go through the whole authorization process again. Finally, I figured out that there's a button on there that says automatic placements. And if you turn it off, it's still so I'm not cleared to run anything political on Instagram, and I don't want to do that anyway. But there's also two checkboxes that says automatic placements and messaging, and because you can run ads and messaging, and what was the other one? Instagram. Well, I figured out you have to uncheck both of those boxes. Just turning that option off isn't enough, and they have the clunkiest, most complex, most un customer friendly, worst you know, clunkiest, worst interface to do business in the entire business. So in the midst of this, I thought, well, I'm going to go on to LinkedIn and see what it's like to run an ad on LinkedIn. Put an ad up on LinkedIn, took 5 minutes, boom. Facebook's extremely complicated. And they present themselves as this, you know, paragon of virtue when it comes to technology. Moreover, if you have a problem, you're never going to talk to a human being. And they're never going to get back to you. I had 2 emails into Facebook to have this whole thing reviewed. I haven't heard from them, and that was more than 24 hours ago. So this is another example of this veneer of perfection is very thin. And when there's a problem, that veneer of protection rapidly dissipates. So my point here is this. We like to think that the United States is this incredible country where everything works great and there's nothing to worry about and they will handle it no matter what, especially when it comes to government. The government's going to handle it. Don't worry. The state will handle it. Don't worry. Don't even get me started about going to the DMV for anything. I could do 3 podcasts about that. Don't worry. All this is going to be handled and you don't have to worry about anything until stuff starts to break loose and things start to cascade. So I will only say this. I don't know what's going to happen in the future with this virus, but if I were you, if I were people posting on Facebook and social media, oh, you people are so stupid. This is nothing but fear mongering. Again, we're all mongers of something. We're either mongers of propaganda for our guy, or we are mongering information. I'm simply mongering questions. That's what I'm doing. I'm not fear mongering. I don't know what's going to happen with this thing, but if this gets to the point where things start to get to move a little too fast for these supposedly highly competent, as the president called them, professionals in our government, which isn't as competent and as together as it seems, then you're going to see something completely different on your television screens. And in conclusion, in relation to this economic question, it's not just a question of customer service. It makes me wonder, when you look at these big companies who have been growing or adding prices, you know, growing monetarily through their stock prices over the last 10 years, these major corporations where everything seems so perfect. But I think there's a lot of people at these companies that don't do anything. I think there's a lot of incompetency at these companies. And I would even offer, and I haven't checked this, but I believe, and we saw this in 2008, when they said, oh, the banks, they're amazing. They've got this all covered. The fundamentals of the economy are strong. There's nothing to worry about. And then as time went on, we began to see this contagion spread across the world based on these subprime mortgages that everyone claimed, including I interviewed the assistant treasury secretary, and he made a big point of telling me there was nothing to worry about, right? That everyone was like, don't worry, the fundamentals are there. I think there's a lot of these companies which appear to be very solid that might not be as solid. So when it comes to the world economy, not just the United States, when it comes to the world economy and then the U.S. economy, if there's enough of a shock, there's a lot of these companies, and I'm going to say a lot, and I don't know, I haven't researched this, but I believe that there's a lot of these major companies traded on the stock exchange, major companies that are private as well, that aren't going to be able to sustain a very long or deep recession. And that's why I say, if things go a certain way, you're going to see something completely different on your television screens, and you're not going to like it. Well, it almost goes without saying that because of coronavirus, among other things, major manufacturers are saying, you know, maybe we need to bring some of this manufacturing back to the United States. If your company is thinking about this, you might want to suggest Depot Star. What do? American Design Engineering and Manufacturing. Depot Star. Check them out online at depotstar.com. That's DEPOTSTAR, depotstar.com. All right, thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. iTunes, I recommend Spotify for Android devices, but we're on Google Play, Stitcher.com, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, all the places, all the things. Thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, especially the sharing for the posts that I put up with these podcasts. And I also appreciate donations for Mobile Podcast Command. You heard how much it costs, and so I really appreciate the donations. questions, whether it's 25, 300, 250, Mike and Ed, or 45, Mandy, or anybody that wants to give me anything, $5, $6, $7, because that goes into the fund for these trips. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, podcast 908. What was the title? I almost don't remember. Fearmonger, Fishmonger, Virusmonger. Podcast 908. The Bob Davis Podcasts.
It's alright if you love me. It's alright if you don't. I'm not afraid of you running away, honey. I get the feeling you owe. And pretend your eyes give you away. Something inside you is feeling like I do. Is it all there is to say? Baby, break down. Go ahead, give it to me. Break down, honey, take me through the night.